Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Short answer is yes. Long answer, of course, is a long, strange trip.
Hi, everybody. It's Patrick here. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. It seems that we're getting together and talking about musicians that have passed more and more frequently. And as time goes on, I'm sure that's something, that will continue to happen just because of the time and the history of rock music. But this one, this is different. This is feels to me, and I definitely want to get our panel's opinions and thoughts on this. I'll try to, for once, keep my mouth fairly closed. But Bob Weir has passed away, the legendary guitarist from the Grateful Dead. It's funny, Bobby was known as the kid for a long time. He was the young one in the group. And I think that this marks a significant shift in rock music's timeline. So I want to ask all of our panelists about that today. So today on the panel, we have Rob Gates. How are you, Rob?
Fine, Patrick. Wish we could be here under better circumstances, but always good to hear your voice.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining. I appreciate it. From New York City, Jason Goble. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. How's everybody? Glad to be with everybody.
Thank you. And Kevin Bartlett with some new body parts over there in the Midwest. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing well. It's been a very contemplative week.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree. Well, thank you all very much for coming on. And I think I'll start with you, Rob, if you don't mind. And this is a question I wanted to get to everybody to sort of begin this story. What was it that first drew you to Bob Weir's playing or singing or whatever he was doing in the Dead? And, over the years of following him, did that view of him come to change, or did you become to appreciate him, more or maybe to some degree in a different way?
Short answer is yes. Long answer, of course, is a long, strange trip. So, but it begins at the beginning, which I think is appropriate enough. And I think for a lot of folks of my age, of Generation X, our first exposure to the Grateful Dead was through Bob Weir, because it was through the radio, which means we were being exposed to a lot of truckin' and a lot of Sugar Magnolia in those days. And those, of course, were Bobby songs. And
yep.
So, before we started going to the shows and whatnot, it was... that's what you heard on the radio. And there was a mix, some Uncle John's Band and some Casey Jones, but primarily, those two songs, which were Bobby. And it's like, okay, well, just, another rock and roll group. I mean, this is back when, I was early teens, if probably before that, I think 12, 11 or 12 or six, some such. Fast forward to college. I started going to shows. So in the 80s, pre Touch of Grey, I feel like I need to... In the Dark, I feel like I need to qualify that. But, in thinking about this question, if you were strictly going on the Grateful Dead's albums, there's very few Bobby selections on the albums. He of course had his solo album, but that was again sort of really, deep, Deadhead stuff, the Ace album. For the casual... for the casual fan, the Skeletons in the Closet, of course, the greatest hits, which is, the first one I had. And then, that led to American Beauty and, with Truckin' and Sugar Mags. But after that, there's relatively few songs from Bobby on the album. So there wasn't a ton of Bob exposure until you went to the shows. You started going to the shows and, I'd listened to tapes, before the shows and started to realize, oh, you know, there's a lot more to Bob than just what's on the albums. Like, Bobby does a lot of singing, does a lot of covers, does a lot of country. There's the cowboy tunes,
right?
You know, all of that stuff. And then you get to the shows, and it's like, okay, well, this guy's at the front of the stage. Like, what's going on? Like, I thought Jerry was, like, the guy. Why is Jerry over stage, you know, stage left and then over to stage right, you know, after that? It's like, why is this guy Bob Weir at the front of the stage? And why is this guy Bob Weir doing all these songs? And I remember I went, took a friend to a show, had never been to a show, and his first comment to me at the intermission was, wow, I didn't know how much singing Bobby did. And that's when you start to begin that Bobby is a really, you know, important part of the band. Like, he's just not this guy in the background. Now, you know, one of the ironies about that was that if you read Relics, as an example, you know, like I did, like, they were always crapping on Bobby. You know,
right.
Jerry was the thing that all the cartoons are like, oh, you know, we're you showboat and, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, Bobby had... you know, his place is in the front of the band. And as I got older, and I'm sure many, you know, fans did as well, and start to learn more and listen more to the music, become a little more sophisticated, you start to realize how big of a role he played. And then you realize that, oh, well, Bobby plays lead in some songs and Jerry plays rhythm. You know, especially those songs which Jerry sings, you know, Bob is actually taking the lead. But once, you know, Jerry passed, and I think Bobby was able to come out from that shadow, you know, and I don't want to steal, you know, Jason and Kevin's thunder, because I'm sure they have, you know, their thoughts as well, is when you really start to see Bobby as maybe even the brilliance behind the band. You know, Jerry's Jerry. Jerry's awesome. Jerry wrote these great songs. Jerry was an awesome guitarist and a great singer. But when you see what Bobby did post Jerry, in keeping, first of all, keeping the music together, you know, going through a whole host of musicians, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later, you can start to see, you know, where he wanted to take the music as opposed to where, you know, it had gone with the Dead. And I think at the end of the Dead's run, it started to become, even in the 80s, it started to become very formulaic, mm-hmm. right? Like, you knew the set list, you know, you knew the opener was going to be a Jerry opener or a Bobby opener. There's going to be either a cowboy set or a country set. You know, there's going to be the Dylan tune, which Bobby sang, and Bobby did Dylan quite well. And then, you know, you'd go into the, you know, the intermission, then there'd be the second set, there'd be three or four songs, drum space, two or three songs out, encore, you know, same formula. And toward the end, you know, you could start to, you know, pretty much guess what those songs were going to be. Once they broke out of, you know, once the Grateful Dead had ceased to become the, you know, the Jerry Garcia led Grateful Dead, you started to see, you know, Bobby putting together various iterations of the band, some with the, you know, the surviving members, you know, with Phil and Mickey and Billy and others, you know, like further, you know, with Steve Kimmick yep. and Mark Herron. You know, I've seen all of them, some better than others. But you saw they started bring back old tunes. They started bring back new arrangements to old tunes or original arrangements to old tunes. You know, Jeff Chimenti, you know, brought back some of the original arrangements to the old tunes, you know, back from Aoxamoxa and before. And all of this is because of Bobby, right? Bobby was the leader of the band. You know, I was fortunate with Mike Snyder to see Bobby in the National Symphony at...
oh, yeah, I remember that,
yeah. The Kennedy Center. Yeah, back then it was just called the Kennedy Center. But that was like another Bobby project. And of course, he had the Wolf Brothers. He did all this stuff. The guy was always on the road, always reinventing either himself or reinventing the music. And, you know, I gained a whole new appreciation, like I said, post-Jerry, when he was really allowed to sort of do what he wanted to do versus what the band wanted to do. And I think we'd be, you know, I think we really need to be honest. And Jerry really controlled a lot of what went on, you know, in the Grateful Dead.
Beautifully said. Kevin, how about you? When was your first connection to Bobby? And when did you sort of realize he was who he was?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with Rob in terms of, you know, I never thought of it that way until, you know, Rob said that in terms of my first exposure to the Grateful Dead were these Bobby songs, right?
Yeah.
And it's true, right? Those were the radio-friendly, you know, songs of the day. I mean, even off of, yes, you had Touch of Grey, but you had Hell in a Bucket, which, you know, was a big hit as well. You know, I want to clarify, because I guess I would be one of those in the dark deadheads. However, I was supposed to see them in 1985 at the USF Sundome in Tampa, and I had to work. And there's nothing worse than work getting in the way of going to a concert.
Right.
Now that I'm married, maybe there's some other things that are worse, but you know what I mean. So my first, you know, I saw the Grateful Dead three nights in a row at the UIC Pavilion in April of 1987. And I got a job as an usher to work the shows. You know, it was three nights of, I was absolutely blown away. I mean, I will admit, you know, that I was, you know, the skeleton in the closet, right? Those greatest hits of the Grateful Dead. I had not developed my deadhead rhythm, you know. I haven't gone back into the catalog. I didn't have, you know, the albums or, you know, anything like that. I just had started trading some live, you know, Dead. And when I saw, I will say, you know, Bobby, I mean, his songs, you look at, I mean, you mentioned Ace, Rob. Ace, you top to bottom, that's eight songs of Bobby's. Those are all songs that the Grateful Dead played in heavy rotation throughout. Yeah. They are phenomenal, right? And, you know, two songs that I saw in that first weekend that made me appreciate Bobby One More Saturday Night, when he's just rocking, right? He's howling when he would, you know, he'd get that howl going. It was fantastic. And then the one that I truly, truly cannot live without is Throwing Stones. Because, and I know that was on In the Dark, but I absolutely love that song.
Cat alley, rope and bone. ashes all fall down. Call my sergeant, pinstripe bosses, roll the dice. Anyway they fall, guess who gets to pay the price?
And they, you know, they would always, you know, move that into, not always, but they, most of the time they'd move that into Not Fade Away, which, you know, the crowd would explode, right? And I do think that, you know, back then, Bobby was the energy, right? I mean, because Jerry, everybody was there to see Jerry. Everybody was there to see if Jerry moved, you know?
Yeah.
Right? But Bobby really kind of like brought out the rock in, and even the country. I love the country stuff. Are you kidding me? Love it. And I agree with Rob. I think after Jerry passed and the Dead became, well, they became the Dead. They became the Other Ones. They became Further. And then it was Dead and Company, right?
Yeah.
I do think that there was freedom in that. And I think Bobby helped, you know, drive, you know, that freedom. I mean, you know, they would go back and cover St. Stephen, you know, a song that they hadn't done in years. And I really, you know, this past week, just looking at a bunch of Bobby collaborations and Bobby, you know, videos. And I appreciate him so much more than I did as when I was following. I was there to see Jerry, right? You know, when Bob would go into eternity, I'm like, oh God, what is this? You know, I think he owned it and he wanted it to keep going. And that's the one thing. It's easy to be nostalgic. And I've seen interviews with Bobby, and he was not nostalgic. He's like, I lived the 60s. I don't need to go back and live the 60s. I need to keep pushing forward. And I think that's what he did with all these other bands and all these other iterations. I mean, yeah, he would still play some of the same songs, but he's interpreting them differently.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what's really important. And I think that's what drove, you know, Bobby, and yes, much greater appreciation for him post Jerry.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Jason, how about you? What was your origin connection to Bobby and the Dead?
All right. So let me start with this. Unlike Rob, unlike Kevin, but like I think a bunch of fans or people who ultimately grew to love the Dead music, I came to the Dead sort of later in life. I actually never saw a Grateful Dead show. In college, most of my friends were not Deadheads. There was a Grateful Dead tribute band that would play our college every like spring party weekend. So I remember liking the song Tennessee Jed, but really none of it stuck. You know, going to, I moved back after law school to Long Island. There were cover bands that would play. This two of the more famous ones, Zen Tricksters, and I saw, I think, one or two Dark Star Orchestra songs. And I was kind of like, all right, I got to see the real thing. My first exposure was Phil Lesh and Friends, and you know, that was the quintet with Warren Haynes, and I love that show. So when the Dead announced the Reunited Dead announced they were touring in 2003, and they hadn't announced a Long Island show, that was the first show I traveled to, which was they played Saratoga. And I spent the weekend in Albany. I only saw the one show in Saratoga. But, you know, then that kind of led to me, I want to see more of this. And along the lines of what I think Rob said, my first Rat Dog show, I think, was 2004, 2005. And I remember going to that show. And I'm like, first off, he had a saxophonist. I think it was Kenny Brooks, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was the saxophonist that played with Rat Dog. And I'm like, wow, he's got horns in this music. I'm like, and you know, I'm a sucker for horns or for sort of brass. So I'm like, he's incorporating horns into this. And then I think I went to two Rat Dog shows that he played at the Beacon. And the second night, he brought up a acapella band that did backup as to what song, I guess, he brought them up for. And then they all did an acapella version for Liberty. And I think at that point, that's where I kind of like fell in love with Bob. And, you know, I ended up going to, you know, like Rob, I ended up seeing a bunch of spinoffs, but definitely a lot of the Bob stuff. I went to a bunch of Weir and Wolf Brothers shows, which also had like a huge horn section. I ended up, and, you know, I've talked about it. I did the show on my first time at the Sphere, and, you know, I ended up going. I was just talking to my friend slash boss, Matt, and he was here tonight in my office still. And, you know, we were talking, like, we had to probably at the end of the day see 25 Dead and Company shows. And the one thing I'll say about Bob is that, you know, with Dead and Company, it wasn't really, it was Bob, you know, Bob was obviously a reason people went out to, but Bob, you know, was essentially just a role player in that band. I mean, he deferred to Mayer. He wanted Burbridge to star. He wanted Cementi. I mean, the only way, you know, Jeff Cementi became one of my favorite people, and admittedly, he's just like, he was like a role player in Bob's band. But that was, you know, at the end of the day, that was, you know, that was Bob at the end of the day. And, you know, for me, I don't know, as I said, I do have this feeling also as to Phil, you know, because he was the one who sucked me in. But I also thought Bob basically made it his life and made it clear he wanted to just keep on playing this music. And, you know, that enthusiasm definitely translated, and that's why I think I got sucked into this, you know, the tail end of the Long Strange Trip, if you can call Dead and Company part of the Long Strange Trip.
Yeah, I definitely think that qualifies as part of it for sure. Late great Bob Weir right there, doing playing in the band from his 1972 solo album, Ace. I want to thank Rob Gates, Kevin Bartlett, and Jason Goble very much. And the good news is we're going to hear much more from them in the next couple episodes. We're breaking this up into a 3-episode set, as would be fitting for the Dead. It's going to go on for a few days. So I hope you're ready for our memories of Bobby Weir. And this took place rather suddenly while we were in the middle of January and doing our countdown, and we weren't able to find a place to fit it in until the beginning of this month. So I'm really glad to present these episodes to you. Hopefully you enjoyed, and we'll be looking forward to a couple more of these with the 3 panelists and myself, hopefully not talking a whole lot. Just want to remind everyone to continue to vote in the 90s Album Madness Bracket Tournament. That is going on as we speak. You'll get a new matchup every day on the Rock in the Suburbs Facebook page, Suburbs Pod on Facebook, and you can follow along with the voting in a couple different places. So with that, we'll send you out with a little more Grateful Dead music, and make sure to tune in for part 2 of the Rest in Power Bobby Weir episodes tomorrow.
I saw the Grateful Dead 3 nights in a row at the UIC Pavilion in April of 1987, and I got a job as an usher to work the shows.